This past week, as Bronson mentioned, we did what we do regularly in the TV studio for those cameras. We did a television program. We happened to do two of them, and oftentimes after it's over, you sit and you wonder, what are we doing? I mean, what is this all about? And you wonder, well, did we do okay? Well, did we word it right? Did we give the right examples? Did we touch on the right scriptures? And that type of thing. But to take it another step farther, and I like to draw all of us into this, I want us to consider as a collective audience what it is that we're doing with the television program. And the reason why this is very important is because that's what you all contribute to with your money, your offerings, your contribution, and your tithes. Every single day, the mail comes. Of course, we're not here on the weekends, and we obviously are not doing it on the Sabbath. But you folks are mailing in your contributions, your tithes, and your support, your offerings, because you believe in something. You're supporting the television program, the publishing of the books, the office, the operation that we have here, all of our employees, all that's part of it. And I'm just asking, why are we doing it? What's it really all about? And then in asking that question, I want to raise the possibility of how we can do it more effectively. Because the truth of it is, as I boil it down, and this is somewhat of a spinoff of a thought that I had at the Feast of Tabernacles with a message that I delivered then, is this. All of us are in a search and rescue mission. Whether you know it or not, we're out there in a search and rescue mission. The reason why this, to some degree, is on my mind is there's a nagging, little worrisome, unclosed chapter of a book that was in the news that's not been closed yet. Do you know what that was? There's no way for you to know unless I tell you. But do you remember just about a week or so ago, wasn't it? It was all over the headlines about that little boy, I think he was 5 years old, up in Colorado, who was playing between two groups of hikers, and he was part of that, and I believe his other family member was along, but there was a group of adults and kids up there, some distance ahead apparently, and there was a group behind, and they were going up this trail, and as they hiked along, they were going along, he would play between groups. He would run up there, and they'd see him, and then he would run back down to the trail, and he'd see the other group. What was unfortunate about this is that this group, when the little boy wasn't with them, thought the little boy was with the other group. Then when the boy was with the other group, wasn't with this group, they thought that he was with the other group. And guess, as you all know the story, that little boy got lost. And I've thought a lot about that because of spending time in the mountains and my own anxiety over being lost and losing my own children. And it's such a sad, terrible, possible tragedy to think about, because to my knowledge, I have not heard in the news, although it was on there day after day after day for a while, they have not found that little boy yet. Has anybody heard that they did? Well, they haven't, and that's worrisome, because most likely one possibility is that he could have been stolen. You know, they didn't talk about that, but somebody could have stolen that little boy and he could be alive, but they apparently don't think so. They're talking about that most likely what occurred is that he wandered off the trail, which I've even wondered about that, because a child doesn't have to wander off the trail to be attacked by an animal. You know, animals are pretty cagey. They're smart if you spend any time in the woods and nature, although they're very careful. If there was a wide gap between the two groups, that little boy could have been snatched up by a wild animal, either a bear or a mountain lion, on the trail. Now, the thought is that he apparently wandered off. And as I think about that, don't you wish there would have been something, some bell, some siren, some sound, some change in the little boy, so that the moment he was lost, he would have known it. Wouldn't that have been nice? Just that one step off the trail, or that moment when danger was imminent and close, if he could have just known and gone to those who could take care of him. But it just did not happen. Well, what we're involved in as a church, what you do with your tithes and offerings, what we do in television, is all part of a search and rescue mission. And it's pretty important because we're after those people who don't know they're in imminent danger, who don't know that they are lost, who are playing games. They don't know they're playing games, but this is a certainty. Many of the people out in this old world of ours are not as we may have supposed years ago, and I've heard this said. I've heard it said that people who are not part of the church are miserable, unhappy, in trouble. you know, without friends, so forth and so on. And, you know, when you first hear that, it says, well, yeah, that could be true, but think about it for a moment. That's just not true. People out in this old world of ours, in the main, they do have good relationships. And honestly, lots of them have good, happy marriages that last a long time. They have a network of friends that they do things with. You know, whether they get to watch football together on the weekend or they get together after work. That's just the way it is. Everybody out there isn't packing a gun, smoking dope, and, you know, going unshaven, you know, attacking people. That's just not the way it is. So my question is what are we doing? Are we in a rescue and search mission, or are we not? And to understand that, I think it's helpful to go to Luke chapter 15, where I have taken us before, but I would like you to turn there today because I want us to look at someone who is having fun, even though he is lost, but you will notice that he is lost for only a while. This is the story of the prodigal son, Luke chapter 15. And as I was reading through it this time with a different, with an eye toward a different explanation or something I hadn't caught before, something did jump out at me. Here in Luke chapter 15, beginning in verse 11, the story of a man, of a father who has two sons. And you are familiar with the story. The younger in verse 12 of them said to his father, Father, give me all the, you know, the portion, the part that's coming to me. That he could take his journey into a far country and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And when I read that, I thought, well, I wonder what that riotous living is. I guess that might vary from person to person. What one person considers riotous living is not what another person might consider. But, you know, you sort of conjure up ideas. I guess he was going to the bars. What was he doing? He wasn't working, I guess. Maybe going to houses of ill repute. Maybe that was it. Anyway, it was riotous living. Now, to help understand that, I noticed what his older brother said over here in verse 30, I believe it is. As he talked about, as his son, as the younger brother come back home, and he comments as to what the younger brother was doing. He says, but as soon as this your son was come, which has devoured your living with what? Well, now we have an indication, at least from the son's viewpoint, that he was running around with women that he ought not to be running around with. He says, and then you have killed for him the fatted calf. So we get this idea that this younger son went over there where time was not an issue. Money really was an issue. He had all the money that he wanted, and he was just going to go out and do what he did. Now, my point is that he was just like so many in our society, whether they are out going to houses that they ought not to be going to, or whether they're wasting their money, that's not the issue. The issue is that people don't know they are lost, and they're not looking to be found because they have no need to. They're comfortable. They have all their wants. But, you know, that only lasts for a time. It does. It only lasts for a time until reality comes knocking at your door. And that's what happened here with this younger son. You know the story, and I just wanted you to see it in verse 16, because something changes things. Something unexpected occurs. Now, yesterday I had a delightful opportunity to visit with a gentleman who is from our neck of the woods. And he came by the office. He's an avid viewer of the television program. Bronson had a chance to meet with him, and I was really struck by our conversation because he was a man of good biblical knowledge, good understanding, and yet what has jolted him recently is something unexpected in his life. And I'm not saying that he was lost or is lost. I'm not going to impute that to him because he has a lot of knowledge. But it caught my attention that what jolted him is he has had multiple experiences in recent years with heart attacks. And it forced him to ask serious questions. The majority of our conversation together, guess what we talked about? What happens when you die? What happens after death? We talked about the resurrections. It was on his mind. Now, that wasn't on his mind years ago because he was out, if you will, doing like all of us have done, and there was nothing unexpected going on in his life. When things unexpected occur, it causes us to come out of are being lost and begin to search for what's going to make a difference. And I wish that could have happened with that little boy up in Colorado, though I suspect that truly, because the elements were so severe, that he was either stolen by somebody or eaten by a mountain animal, or he just crawled off somewhere, swept away in a stream, or he froze to death. You know, all terrible options, none of which I'm comfortable with. But I wish that he could have been found. without us as adults having to be yanked into reality about something that is totally unexpected. We see here in Luke chapter 15, it was apparently very important to Jesus to impact his disciples with how important it is for us to be on a search and rescue mission. Because here in Luke chapter 15, we have some other examples. We have the example of the sheep. If you'll turn back to verse 4, notice with me. This man who has lost a sheep. Now, I'm not a sheep herder. I wouldn't pretend to be, not a literal sheep herder. I've been around sheep herders. I've heard them talk the lingo. I've seen the little wagons they live in the mountains, and I'm somewhat aware of their fears. I've read some books on sheep herding. But you know, when I think about this, I've wondered, how does a sheep get away from the herd? You know, have you ever thought about that? How does a sheep? I guess there's lots of ways to do it. A varmint could be after it. But basically speaking, if I've been accurate in my observation of sheep, here's something, I'm going to put it in language we'll understand, it's sort of attractive and funny. He nibbles himself away from the herd. He nibbles himself away from the herd because he loses sight of what's important. And that might be an overstatement or an understatement, but just think about it. The sheep's got his head down, he's eating. And when your head's down, you're nibbling, and you're going a certain direction. And we, like sheep, as human beings, just like that little boy, he didn't nibble himself away, but he took little boy steps away from the trail and from what was important, and he lost his life. What I find here, then, is this first example, the sheep, that he has lost. And he probably did it because he nibbled himself away from what was really important. Think for a moment as we consider this example of you being the shepherd. And I've never done this, but I've done it with other things, just an awareness, like when we have youth camp, I could come into our youth camp here of 40, 50, 60, 70 kids, and if there was a group of our kids missing, I didn't have to count them one by one by one to find out. I could just sort of get a feel for it. It's sort of like coming home and you know whether your wife's there. It's just something you feel. Well, think about this shepherd for a moment. What he was doing is he was counting the sheep, make sure they were all there. 77, 78, and all of a sudden when he got into the 90s, he would sense, wouldn't it? Wouldn't he sense quickly that, because you just look at that number, there aren't 10 there. 98, it's gone. Now what I'm interested in here is what does God use in this example as an illustration for what we should do? Oh, he'll be all right. He'll make it through the night. That we don't need to go to any trouble to go get that sheep. That sheep will be okay out there. No, he doesn't do that. Notice what happens. He senses that something is wrong, that one is missing, and instantly his plans change, because one missing sheep changed his plans and shifted his priorities. Here's what he does. Will he not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after that which is lost until he find it? I like that word, until. You look. Now let me just stop there before reading the next example of the coin. It says you look until you find it. You know something about a search? Have any of you lost anything important lately? You don't have to show your hands, but you know, let's talk about some of the important things we lose. I'm talking about physical things. I lose these a lot. These glasses right here. And, of course, it's always because Betsy misplaces them. You know, I know immediately I'll say, sweetheart, where did you put my glasses this time? And so it's a fun thing between us now because she knows that I'm just saying, what? Help me look. I know who lost it. I'm the one who wears it. But since you misplaced it, can you help me look? Well, these aren't worth a whole lot of money, but they're worth a little bit because they are of value to me, not because of the money, though I don't want to have to replace them every single month. It's valuable to me because without these on, it strains me physically, so I'm more comfortable with it. So there's a certain amount of value to this. Now, when I lose these, Betsy loses these glasses, we start looking, and we spend a lot of time looking for these glasses until we find them. All right, what kind of valuables do you look for? How about this? A wedding ring. How much trouble would you go to find your wedding ring if you lost it? And history has shown me that men lose wedding rings occasionally. And they don't understand the attachment to it that wives do, that mate of theirs. But oftentimes when I have misplaced, or occasionally, because I don't lose this as much as I do this, I go to a lot of trouble looking for this. Because this is important to whom? Well, yes, to me. But it's also important to Betsy. I've known people spend hours and hours and hours and turn the house upside down looking for a ring because of its value. Could it be replaced? Sure. But this one has that little insignia inside. And you've worn it on your fingers all these years. It's very, very important. Another thing we lose that is of some value, and it's not nearly as valuable as this, I don't believe, but how many of us lose our car keys? Boy, now there, okay, now everybody's done that. Yeah, here's what we do. We lose these car keys of ours. And if you're in a hurry, you hope you have another set. And here's what's interesting about it. If you do have another set, you don't spend a lot of time looking for the ones you just lost. You just use the other set. But if this is the only set you've got, you will look and look and look and look until you find it wanted. It has a value to you. The other thing I was thinking about, see all these things I've got on me so I can use myself as an example today, is this. What if you lose this? Or you ladies lose your purse? How much trouble will you go to find it? You say, oh, well, I might look for it today, and it's okay. It's all right if I left it at the mall. Because whoever finds it will take care of it. You know, I don't need to be worried about it. They'll turn it in to me. They'll see my phone number inside of it. Most of us don't have phone numbers in there. We just have our credit cards. But if the phone number's in there, well, they'll give me a call. No. Yeah, let me tell you what happens in this old world. You lose that wallet, you think somebody's going to take care of it or spend it? A few times people will turn it in to you, but most likely they will spend it. Wouldn't you go to a lot of trouble to find your wallet or your purse if you lost it? Okay, let me make my point. A search reveals how important it is to you. And let me be quite candid to all of you who are listening and those on the tape program today. This is one of the things that concerns me about organizations, if you will, who are interested in only themselves. Why aren't they interested in those people driving across that bridge and the ones that they are bumping into in the mall, or those people who are over there in the church that doesn't understand the Sabbath yet, so forth and so on? How is it that we're supposed to, it's not important, it's not valuable, we're not supposed to spend a lot of time and effort and money and labor to reach those people out there? That's what concerns me, because where you spend your time dictates how important what's lost is to you. Where you spend your money tells you as well what's important to you. So I just put that in at this point, because he searched for the sheep until it was found. What about this coin in the next little section here in verse 8? It says, either what woman having 10 pieces of silver, if she loses one piece, does not light a candle and sweep the house and seek diligently, she's diligently doing it until she can find what she has lost. Well, I think we can understand that. How did it happen? I don't know how she lost it. How do I lose my glasses? Through what? Preoccupation. Isn't that one of the ways we do that? We get preoccupied. Carelessness. There's another way, just carelessness. You get involved and just carelessly you forget where they are. There's lots of ways that you can lose something. Lots of ways that you can lose a coin. Lots of ways that you can, well, not lots of ways. I remember one time I was at the Feast of Tabernacles, and this ring right here that I wear on my right hand, it was cold in the auditorium, and we were all involved in the church services, and we raised our hand up, and it was so cold, my ring in the auditorium just flung off and went sailing down several seats in front of me. I mean, just that easily, I lost my ring. And, you know, you think I searched for it? Well, there it is. I found it. It was very important for me to get it. So I just mentioned here with this coin, it could have happened basically in any number of ways, but not the least of which is carelessness. But what I want you to notice here is, what did she do when she realized she had lost something of value? She placed everything on hold and swept the house out until she could find it. The reason I'm bringing this up is to accentuate the effort that we must all put forth and the vision we must exercise in our search and rescue mission, because there are killers that allow us to be defeated and tired and weary, and we stop looking for that five-year-old boy. There are killers out there. We'll talk about those here in just a moment. One of the conclusions that I read or come to when reading the book of Ecclesiastes, and also as I look around life, is the following. Most of you, I'm willing to make a bet, most of you, whenever you were younger, we don't have to put an age to that, I doubt any one of you set out to wreck your life. Said, boy, I woke up this morning, I'm going to go out and wreck my life. Today's the day wrecker. This is it. I'm going to wreck my life today. And yet, look at how many people wreck their lives. Let me give you an example of a young couple. Dana and Marie. She was about 14, claiming she was 18. She found herself in the pastor's office. She was sitting there. She was a young girl, as I just said. She had dark hair. She had striking features. She was very nervous. She just couldn't look up at the pastor, had to look away. She was wringing her hands. She didn't say a word. Seated beside her was, she said, or they said, because she didn't talk, her husband. The pastor didn't believe them, though. But no, he said that they were married. He was blonde-haired, had one of those, he was blonde-haired, just getting started, because he was only about 18 years old, and he had one of those see-through blonde mustaches. You know, he was trying to get that big old mustache going. He was a slight build, but it looked like he was pretty stout, you know, pretty strong, pretty lean. What they wanted is they wanted financial help because they were in a bind. And it's not that they were members of the church. They just knew that they could go to a church, and if they could say all the right things, they might touch the minister's heart. The minister might give them their money or some of their money. Well, that's exactly what happened. The minister just couldn't resist, and the church gave them a little bit of assistance. 2 weeks later, the pastor, who was involved in this conversation with them, got a phone call from Marie again. Marie said, "Can you help me? My husband is in jail. We need some money to bail him out." Now, that's repeated every single day in churches across this country. It happens here in our church as well. Do you think that this young man and this young woman set out to wreck their lives? Do you think that they set out to end up in jail? Do you think that they set out to sit there with no money, totally unhappy, apparently, in a life of deceit? I suggest they didn't. But they got off the trail. They got lost along the way. And they needed help. There was no siren that went off. There was no warning. That just happened. And so it is with many of us. As I think about our church and what we're doing, I want you to listen. It's a little bit of a lengthy reading, and I apologize for that. Oh, Betsy and I, we talk about that. It's always better to tell it rather than read it, but I don't think that I can tell it as well as I can read it, and it's not too long, so just bear with me. This is a classic story, and I want you to think about it as I read it. It's entitled The Life-Saving Station. It's a simple parable, and I want you to listen and catch the meaning of this parable. As it begins, on a dangerous seacoast where shipwrecks often occur was a crude little life-saving station. The building was just a hut, and there was only one boat. I'm going to interrupt myself here to say, you know, sometimes we get lost in how big things are or how many people are involved. Remember the point, there was just one hut and one boat. The few devoted, I like that word, devoted members kept a constant watch over the sea. With no thought for themselves, they went day or night searching tirelessly for the lost. So many lives were saved by the wonderful little station that it became famous. Some of those who were saved and various others in the surrounding area wanted to become associated with the station and give of their time, their money, and their effort for the support of its work. New boats were bought. New crews were trained. The little life-saving station grew. Some of the new members of the life-saving station were unhappy, though, because the building was crude and poorly equipped. They felt that a more comfortable place should be provided as the first refuge of those saved from the sea. So they replaced the emergency cots with beds and put much better furniture in an enlarged building. Now, the life-saving station became a popular gathering place for its members, and they redecorated it beautifully and furnished it exquisitely because they said it needed to be a club. Fewer members, repeat, fewer members were now interested in going to sea on life-saving missions, so they hired crews to do that for them. The life-saving motif still prevailed in the club decoration. However, as a symbolic life-saving symbol, there was a boat which dominated the room, which was an imitation of what they used to do. Now, about this time, a large ship was wrecked off the coast, and the hired crew brought in boatloads of cold, wet, and half-drowned people. They were dirty and they were sick. Some had black skin and some had yellow skin. And the beautiful club was considered, though, messed up when they were brought into it. So the property committee immediately had a shower house built outside the club where victims of shipwrecks could be cleaned up before coming inside. At the next meeting, a split took place in the club membership. Most of the members wanted to stop the life-saving activities because they were unpleasant and a hindrance to normal life of the club. Some members insisted on life-saving as their primary purpose and pointed out that they still were called a life-saving station. They finally, though, were voted down, however, and told that if they wanted to save the lives of various people who were shipwrecked in those waters, they could begin their own life-saving station down the coast. So they did. As the years went by, the new station experienced the same changes that had occurred in the old. It evolved into a club, and yet another life-saving station was founded. History continued to repeat itself, and if you visit this coast today, you will find a number of exclusive clubs along the shore. Shipwrecks, though, are still frequent in these dangerous waters. But today, most people drown. Boy, as you think about that, it's easy to lose focus. It's okay to be small, one or two people dedicated. Just don't lose sight of the need to go on search and rescue, because that's what it's all about. At least that's what I think it's all about. Well, we in God's church are on a search and rescue, and that's what the television program, the booklets are all about, and it's very, very important for us to succeed, and we are succeeding. If you will turn now to Isaiah chapter 56, there's a verse here I want you to see, which is a little bit of a reverse of what we've been talking about. I think you'll see my point, though. While you're turning over there, that's Isaiah 55, I want you to consider something else, just as to portray the picture to you. Is there anything you wouldn't spend to find your lost child? Think about it for a moment. Is there a clock on your time if your child is lost? I share this with you humorously. The story is told of a group that got together just to illustrate the point. And what they're going to do, they have 9 little children and several adult supervisors. And as it is often the case, it's chaotic when you take a bunch of small children out. Well, let's just say that your child is one of those children, one of those 9 children. And all of a sudden they go out and they have activities, and this child goes here, and this child goes there, and that one goes there. And all the time, and all of a sudden it's time to get them up, but there's a couple missing. And so the chaperones and the adult leaders say, well, that's okay. The majority are with us. And so you come back home and it's time to distribute the kids out, and you're distributing them out, and all of a sudden you see that your child isn't in that number. And the chaperone says, well, hey, wait a minute, don't get bent out of shape. 77.7% isn't too bad, is it? You'd probably pop them in the face, wouldn't you? Because whose child is lost? Your child is lost. And another thought about that, and I have never participated that I recall in a real serious search for someone who's lost. I'm talking about physically. But let me portray, in reference to this parable that we read, how it oftentimes takes place when we get all wrapped up in comfort and size and luxury and all those kinds of things. Here's how it takes place. Someone gets lost. Let's make it Amanda, a little girl. A little girl gets lost, and the call goes out, and everybody says, "You can count on me. I'll be there." And so the parents get all excited about the possibilities, because if everybody's there, they have a greater chance of finding the child that's lost. So the parent drives up, and sure enough, boy, here are RVs. Here are fifth-wheel trailers. The motels are full. They're having the spits are going. The grills are fired up. Steaks are cooking. People are laughing. Music is being played. And you're saying, "Well, hey, what's going on here? We're supposed to be searching." Now, this head searcher comes up to you and says, "Well, listen. Hey, wait a minute. Settle down here. What have you been out of shape for? We're all here. Don't you know that all of us went to a lot of trips? Some of these people have driven 3 hours in their RVs to set up here to be a part of this search. We're doing our best." Every once in a while, somebody goes over and says, "Amanda, Amanda, do you hear me?" And then they'll go take their chair. "Now you answer for me. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that, that sort of a pitiful portrayal of what too often happens in search and rescue?" I'll tell you what's pathetic about it. It's searcher-oriented. They're only concerned about their comfort, their food, their laughter. What about that little lost child over there? Them all being, I don't care how much effort they got put together to get there, unless they all get out there and get diligently about searching that little child, that little boy, that group of people, well, they're going to be lost. Well, now here in Isaiah chapter 55, this one verse, which is something to think about. It says here, verse 6, sort of a twist here, "Seek ye the Lord." So this is a matter that the Lord isn't seeking, though I know that He is out there seeking those who are lost. But here we find a reference to the fact that people need to seek the Lord while He may be found. Now, what that tells me is that there will come a time that it's too late. It doesn't make any difference if you realize you're lost. It's too late. You can't find Him anymore. And I do know when that event is going to take place. When Jesus comes back, He's going to be about pretty important business. The time for doing the searching, looking for God Almighty is when? Now, while He may be found. It says, "Seek ye the Lord while He may be found, and call you upon Him while He is near." I'd like to quickly focus on three statements that kill our enthusiasm in the church to go out and seriously be about rescue and saving, rescue mission, searching and rescue. Three little things. And it's basically this, it's a lie. See, what kills us are lies. Lies are destructive. Lies hurt. Here's the lies that come along with all of us in what we do. And it's something that's just as simple as this. It's a wistful, lethal whisper that you will hear in your ear. It's this: "Well, it's really no use. You know, we've looked and we've looked and we looked and they looked. It's really no use. You know, we've been about our work here in the Church of God International for however many years. I look at our congregation and I look at our attendance today, and couldn't we all say, well, boy, it doesn't seem to be worth it. It doesn't seem to be growing. Is it worth it?" Sure it is. See, if you tell yourself it's really no use, you're listening to a lie. If you say, "Well, we'll never succeed. We're never going to find them," that's a lie. Don't believe it. Don't believe that. Don't buy into that. That's a lie. And if you say this, "Well, boy, I'm about worn out. I'm getting up in years. I'm tired. I may as well quit." Well, no, don't listen to that. What's the Bible say about being weary of well-doing? Don't ever give up. Don't ever give up. Just don't do that. Turn to Luke chapter 10 now as we close. Luke chapter 10 and verse 8 through 10. Because here Jesus sent His disciples out on a search and rescue mission. They were training missions that He would send them out on. And as you read the stories in the gospel, they'd come back and talk about all the miracles that they had performed, the demons they had cast out, and the people that they had healed, all these types of things. Well, let's read what we are told here in Luke chapter 10, verses 8 through 10. "And into whatever city you enter, and they receive you, eat such things as are set before you, and heal the sick that are therein, and say unto them, the kingdom of God has come near unto you. But into whatsoever city you enter, and by the way, let me stop myself there. How do we enter into cities? The only way I know that we're really effectively doing it is through what you do in your local community, and yet in a broad sense of what we do with television. We enter into all these cities, places we don't even know about. Some people click on and like what they see, and some people say, ugh, and they go on to something else. So we are received some places and turned down in others. But let me read the last part of verse 10. But into whatsoever city you enter and they receive you not, go your way. Go on somewhere else. Because there's always another town, always another community filled with people who are lost, people who are searching, people who are all of a sudden have an unexpected crisis in their life and they want answers. Go out there and find them. Go into the streets and say, even the very dust of your city which cleaves on us, we do wipe off against you. Notwithstanding, be you sure of this, that the kingdom of God is come nigh unto you. So we've got a responsibility to go out there and do exactly what Jesus instructed his disciples to do. And I like to just boil it down to one simple little statement to think about as a part of what our search and rescue mission is. And I'm going to put it in language that I think all of us can understand. It's just this simple. Do not become discouraged. Do not give up. Don't let your faith, your belief, flag in any way. Be unwavering. Jesus has told us, as his disciples, to get about doing something. And it's no more complicated than a paraphrase of these verses that I read to you. And here's what it is. And it's this. Ray and Darren and Randy and my precious daughter, all of us here, go out into the cities. And this applies to our work and our television program, our search and rescue. Let's all go out there, however God does it, and let's take the chance of bumping into people. Because the people we bump into and rub shoulders with, whether on the television program or in person, are the very ones who might just put their arms around you and say, oh my, am I glad you found me. So let's go see who we can bump into.